Chapter 14. Rage bubbled in my chest at the thought of someone interrupting my friend's grieving process. He was dealing with his mother's death, and now he had to deal with an attack. I glanced over at Callan, but his look of sadness was replaced by pure fury. His eyebrows were angled toward his nose, and his green eyes were bright with anger. His mouth twisted into a furious scowl, and his fists were clenched at his sides. "Who is it?" I demanded, though I already knew.
"I imagine they're a demon king creation," Iskander replied. "Nothing we can't handle."
When no attack had immediately followed after the bonding ceremony, for a moment I thought the demon king was changing up his tactics. But it looked like I was wrong. He was going for another head-on attack. He must be getting desperate. "We can take care of this," I told Callan. "Don't worry."
"I'm not letting them come anywhere near my mother," he snarled. "Let's destroy these bastards."
I was a little surprised by Callan's aggression, but I wasn't about to hold him back. He was pissed off, and that would make him an asset against whatever was heading our way.
"I'll lead you to them," Iskander said, and I nodded in reply.
Then we shifted into our dragon forms, and the three of us flew into the sky. I could see a dark cloud on the horizon, and as we flew closer to it, I realized it wasn't a cloud at all.
"What the fuck?" I muttered.
It was a flock of flying black tigers, and their eyes glowed purple with miasma. Their wings flapped across the sky as they flew in formation toward us, and they let out roars that echoed over the mountains as we came closer to attack.
"Namuras!" Iskander shouted. "They're vicious creatures!"
"Do they always have purple eyes?" I asked.
"No, but they're evil anyway," he replied. "All they do is tear into flesh and watch their victims die. I've eradicated them from Rama, but these must have come from the underworld."
"Then let's eradicate them too," I growled.
I hit the first two Namuras with a burst of orange flames, but the flying cats powered through it at first. They flew toward me as balls of flaming fur and wings, but the fire engulfed their miasma-powered bodies in a matter of seconds, and they careened down to land in the breach. I looked over to see Callan had taken on his swordfish ability, and he impaled two more Namuras on his sharp snout like a shish kebab. Iskander used his white fire and mace-like tail to shred through the flying beasts, and I turned back just in time to see a Namura come for me with his claws outstretched. The sharp talons clinked against the impenetrable scales of my foreleg, and I chuckled as I swiped the beast away.
"Can't get me that easily," I muttered, and followed after it.
I roasted the Namura until only its ashes fluttered in the wind, and then I moved on to the next one. The beast seemed to have paid attention to its buddy, and it didn't come at me straight on. Instead, it hovered in front of me for a few seconds as though deciding which direction to attack me from. But he didn't know about the tricks I had up my sleeve. I activated my precognition ability, and a bright gold line appeared in my vision to indicate the Namura had decided to attack from my right. So I kicked it into gear as it flapped its wings. We met in the middle, but I was bigger and stronger, and the impact sent the Namura tumbling into another trio of its kind. As their wings and claws tangled together, I opened my maw and released a blast of fire that engulfed them, and their howls of pain reverberated along the mountains as they fell from the sky. I didn't have to look far for another opponent. We powered through the Namura flock, but it seemed as though they were never ending. Dozens more of the flying cats flooded the skies, and soon I realized a few had flown under us to get closer to the valley.
"Look," I called out. "We can't let them get to the others."
"Oh, my mother,"
Callan snarled.
"Let's go."
He took one last stab at one of the Namuras before he zoomed around and made a beeline for the valley. Iskander and I flew close behind him as he knocked the escaping Namuras out of his path like a linebacker. and I wrapped my talons around the only Namora left as we arrived. I slammed its body to the ground and felt its bones break beneath me, and I tossed the limp body aside as we waited for the rest of the flying beasts to arrive.
"Get your swords ready," I ordered. "There are plenty more where these came from."
"Namuras?"
Nokomis asked as she unsheathed the Sword of Mercy.
"I thought they were extinct."
"They might be," I replied. "These came from the underworld. No mercy for them."
She nodded her head, and Callan and I shifted to our human forms to use our noble swords as well. Then came the battle. At least 20 Namuras landed before us, and we charged them with our swords held high. I sliced the first one's head clean off with one blow, and I swung around to stab another one in the belly. Onyx-colored blood poured from the wound, and the Namora howled in pain as it laid in the black pool. I glanced around to see Nokomis swing her sword and take out two Namoras with one strike, and Nike and Sky moved in unison as they impaled another pair of the vicious beasts. Even Callan fought with fluid movements I hadn't expected as he tore through his own winged opponent with the Sword of Waning. He moved like a dancer, and I wondered if he was a natural fighter or if the sword gave him a new bit of confidence. Either way, he was kicking ass, and we needed it. The number of Namoras had increased by another 24 since we'd landed, and the sky was still dark with more on their way. Thankfully, Rodion kept Aliona by the river and protected her with a barrier spell while she watched us battle the Namoras. Her face was twisted with annoyance, and I knew she wanted to help. But her father and I were on the same page about keeping her and the baby safe from anything that could cause them any harm. The flock of Namoras began to feel more like a horde as we left piles of black bodies on the ground and continued to press through more of them. We sliced, stabbed, cut, and obliterated dozens of Namoras, but they just kept coming. I couldn't help but wonder if they were in the underworld because of all the pain and suffering they'd caused on Anadi, and I had every intention of putting them right back where they belonged. I swung the Sword of Hatra in a wide arc and sliced through another Namora's legs, and it fell to the ground with a roar of pain as it began to bleed out its black blood. Then I turned and cut another beast in half, and I watched as Callan did the same a few feet away.
"We have to figure out how to stop them," I said. "There are way too many of these damn things."
"There has to be an end to them," Callan grumbled.
I agreed, but the only thing I could think of was to petrify them, and I didn't know how well it would work on creatures that had come from the underworld. We had to think of something we hadn't used before.
"Wait, waning," I murmured. "Maybe that makes less of them? Like a waning moon is less of the whole moon?"
"Okay,"
the green dragon asked, as he took another Namora by the throat and jabbed his sword through its head.
"So what?"
"So use your noble sword for its magic," I said. "Maybe it'll take out some of them and we can kill the rest."
"It's magic,"
he echoed with an arched eyebrow, before he plunged the blade into another Namora.
"Yeah, every noble sword has its own power,"
I explained, as I sliced another Namora's head off.
"Mine is healing. Nokomis's makes her an empath. Yours has to do something."
"Even if it does, we don't know what it is," he argued.
"It has to be better than fighting these guys off forever,"
I growled, as I disemboweled another tiger beast.
"You have to try."
"I have no idea how to use it,"
he pointed out.
"What if it makes more of them? I might mess it up."
"It's your birthright,"
I reminded him.
"It will come to you. Just focus on the power you feel with it and let it flow. It isn't rocket science."
"Karina's ready for him to use her,"
Mariah murmured.
"She said it's been so long since she was able to produce her power. She loves being in battle."
"Do you know her power?" I asked. "Is this a mistake?"
"I know it,"
the spirit giggled.
"It won't be a mistake, I swear."
Her giggle made me question my choice to push Callan into using the sword's magic. But if it wouldn't be a mistake, then he had to do it. We needed to try something to get rid of all these Namoras before they overran us. We were all fighting two or more at a time to keep them away from Aliona, the king, and Lena's body. Finally, Callan closed his eyes and grunted as he tried to use the sword.
"Nothing is happening!"
he yelled a moment later. "Oh, yes, it is," I said, and pointed at his blade. The tip of the Sword of Waning was illuminated with the bright yellow light, and then it shot out like a beam and powered through three of the Nomuras. Suddenly, the huge winged tigers began to shrivel into small cats, then kittens, then even smaller until they were no larger than beetles. Holy shit.
"Did it work?"
Callan finally opened his eyes and looked at the tiny Nomuras.
"What the hell?"
"You shrunk them," I laughed as I squished one beneath my boot.
"Of course, your sword does something unlike everyone else's. Do it to all of them."
Like every other ability Callan had, this one was unique to the Green Dragon, and it damn well came in handy today.
"Stand back,"
Callan called out to the others. Nike, Nokomis, Sky, and Iskander looked over at Callan's glowing blade and scurried to stand behind us. Then he let the yellow beam fly. The newest noble of the sword swung the blade around to hit every one of the Nomuras with its bright yellow light. And I felt like I was watching a Star Wars battle as the beasts shrunk down small enough for us to step on them. The fight immediately went from wild and erratic to easy-peasy, lemon-squeezy in a matter of seconds.
"Is that his power?" Nike murmured. "Shrinking things?"
"I guess so," I grinned and shrugged. "I suppose it's a version of waning, right?"
"That it is," my fellow noble chuckled. "I can't believe it. He has the oddest abilities, my lord."
"Yeah," I agreed with a laugh. "You should see his tentacles." Nike barked a laugh as he shook his head, and we followed Callan through the ranks of Nomuras to step on their tiny bodies once he'd shrunk them down to size. But before we could breathe a sigh of relief, I heard the sound of something else approaching, and I looked up to see a swarm of creepy gray bodies and flimsy wings as they hovered over us.
"What the hell are those?"
Nokomis asked with wide eyes.
"Hell fairies," I grunted. "They regenerate limbs, so we can't just cut them up. I know they're small already, but do you think you can shrink them to squishable size too?"
"It's worth a shot,"
Callan replied. He aimed his sword at the incoming flood of hell fairies, and the yellow beam shot out of his blade. The beam glowed brightly as it hit each one of the gray-skinned beasts, and they began to shrink. Suddenly, the first hell fairy simply poofed. With a puff of gray smoke, it disappeared, and it seemed Callan had completely shrunk it out from existence. He continued to aim his sword through the horde, and more of the puffs took the fairy's places. It was both comical and awesome as he laid waste to at least 36 hell fairies in less than a minute. As we looked across the valley, I could still see a few clouds of gray smoke floating in the air above the dozens of dead Nomuras. Their black blood had soaked into the ground, and I could feel nature reach out to me and beg for healing. I knew I'd have to take care of the valley again before we left. So I looked at Iskander, and we got to work. We blew flames over all the Nomura's bodies until only ashes were left, while Callan, Nike, Nokomis, and Sky stepped on the last few beetle versions to finish them off. By the time we finished, the grass was littered with blood-soaked ashes and tiny squished piles of Nomura guts and wings. It was a sad sight for the purified valley, and it was time to take care of it. I focused on my healing power and nature magic as I combined the two and worked to pull out the evil, the death, and the miasma from the ground. I knelt down to dig my fingers into the soil, and I closed my eyes as I felt every drop of poison get plucked from the dirt beneath my fingertips before the black droplets evaporated into the air. Then it all felt clean and pure again. The air was fresh, and the river water was clear. But I wondered how many times I could purify the valley before it became impossible to cleanse the evil from its roots. I hoped that never happened, since it had been difficult to find this place after the ceremonial cliffs were ripped away by the Demon King and his minions. Besides, I liked the valley. It gave us a safe haven for the Redeemivincio ceremonies, and it was easy for Iskander to watch overhead for any dangers like the Nomuras. No one had successfully gotten the jump on us since we'd found this place, and I wanted to keep it that way. I turned around to see Rodion, Castor, and Aliona had begun to wrap Lena's body in a silky piece of fabric, though none of them could lift her. I walked over to help wrap her, and Callan and Nike joined while Aliona and my other lovers watched with tearful eyes. It was sad to see such a beautiful creature taken over by disease, especially knowing she'd finally gotten to see her son again after decades of loss. It pulled at my heartstrings, but I had to take Aeron at his word. He'd said she would be rewarded in their realm, and hopefully she was happier now that she wasn't in pain all the time.
"We should get back to the temple," Rodion said once we'd finished. "I presume you'll want to fly her back."
"Yes, Your Majesty," Callan confirmed. "Thank you for your help and your kindness."
"If you ever need anything in Futhark, please feel free to talk to me," the king said as he offered a firm handshake. "I consider you and Atmos an ally."
"Likewise," the green dragon agreed.
"We'll see you again," Rodion said, as he formed a portal back to the White Jade Temple.
He and Castor stepped through to the white jade floors of the castle, and the rest of us looked around for a moment before I turned toward Callan.
"I'll help you fly her back," I said. "You shouldn't do it alone."
Callan nodded somberly before he shifted into his dragon form. Iskander and I followed suit, and then the white dragon tipped his head and took off to return to his guard duties. He kept watch over the Mihiretti Mountains and White Jade Temple, and he had to make sure no one went after the king while he kept up the seal on the breach. Callan grasped one end of his mother's silk-wrapped body, and I grabbed the other.
"We'll meet you there,"
Aliona said as she guided everyone else toward her portal.
"I'll let Celestia know you're coming."
"Thank you, m'lady,"
Callan replied and choked back another sob. Then we gently lifted Lena's body from the ground, and we glided it into the sky to head south toward Futhark. Callan wasn't making conversation as we flew, and I had no plans to make him. I knew the pain he was feeling, and sometimes it was better to work through it. I hadn't done that great of a job working through my own when it was my mother, and I'd thrown myself into my schoolwork with a fiery passion that ended with a stress blow-up on my aunt. Of course, Aunt Emma wasn't about to take it lying down, and she tore me a new one to make sure I knew she wouldn't be my verbal punching bag. I'd learned my lesson, and after I'd cried to her for about an hour, things were back to normal. And thank the gods for that, since she was the only person who really knew me and my mom, and could tell me things I didn't remember or know about her. We flew over the sands of Rama, and I let the warm air blow over my scales as we zoomed south in silence with the weight of a great dragon between us. At some point, I glanced over to see Callan had tears streaming down his snout, but I didn't say a word. When we finally reached Atmos, many of the city's people were in the town square. I was surprised to see so many of them were openly emotional, and Celestia stood on her front porch with Aliona, Nike, Sky, and Nokomis. Then Celestia rushed forward as we gently laid Lena on the ground and shifted to our human forms.
"Oh, my God,"
the old woman cried out as she fell to the ground and laid her head on the silk.
"My sweet friend. Oh, I'm so glad you're no longer in pain, but I will miss you dearly."
A line of people quickly formed, and dozens of citizens came forward to pay their respects to the Countess. Given their standoffishness before, it was interesting to see how easily they approached Callan now to express their condolences. And I wondered how many of them had been following Huxley and his father's orders while Lena was sick.
"I need you to tell me the rituals," Callan said to Celestia. I can't remember them now."
"We'll arrange all that,"
she replied as she wiped away a tear.
"Don't you worry about that, Your Grace."
"Is it official?"
A woman stopped at the head of the line and looked between Celestia and Callan.
"Count Callan has been named?"
"Yes,"
Callan replied as he tapped the Sword of Waning on his belt.
"My mother declared me the Count,
and the new noble of the sword shortly before her death. I'm taking my rightful place as ruler of Atmos. Callan looked out on the people with the regal air of a ruler, and even I was impressed. I wasn't sure if it was the noble sword that added to his confidence, or if it was simply knowing he was in charge, but he sure looked the part of a badass count.
Thank the gods!
The woman gasped. The small crowd erupted with cheers and applause, and a few scattered to other houses to spread the news. It seemed most of Atmos was pleased with this turn of events, even though the reason for the gathering wasn't so pleasant. Within an hour, the line had grown to the point that it wrapped around the large central building and continued down the main street of Atmos. People came from every corner of the city to pay their respects to Lena and Callan. And it was amazing to see how they came together in this time of grief, even though he obviously hadn't been around for a while. Then the line began to draw the attention of a certain angry dragon. Huxley shoved his way through the growing crowd with a scowl on his face, and he marched over to stand mere inches from Callan.
"Who do you think you are?" he hissed. "Telling people you're the new count. My father has been in charge for years."
"Your father is a fraud, just like you,"
Callan retorted.
"Now get out of my face."
"I don't think I will,"
Huxley said with a smirk.
"And I think you'll give me back my sword now."
I started to intervene when Aliona grabbed my arm.
"Wait a moment, my love,"
she said in a low voice.
"She's right, my lord,"
Mariah whispered.
"Let Callan handle it."
"But he needs help," I insisted.
"If he accepts your help in this small battle, his people will have no faith in him,"
she said.
"You must let him handle this idiot on his own."
"You are right." I sighed with resignation and settled for crossing my arms over my chest while I glared at Huxley.
"I think you've lost your damn mind if you think I'll hand it over," Callan snarled. "You didn't deserve it in the first place, and you took it from a sick old woman who happened to be my mother."
The color drained from Huxley's face as he stared at Callan's heaving chest with a mixture of fear and defiance.
"Well, maybe you shouldn't have left her," he sneered.
"Shit," I muttered. "He fucked up now." Sure enough, Callan lost it. He reared back and delivered a solid punch to Huxley's jaw that sent the douchey dragon's eyes rolling back in his head. He fell to the ground in a slump, and I realized Callan had just TKO'd him. Fucking awesome. It took almost a full minute for Huxley to recover, and he blinked his eyes a few times before he clambered to his feet and pointed at Callan.
"You'll regret this," he shouted. "I'm going to get my father."
"Go ahead," Callan shrugged and laughed. "I'm not scared of either of you." Huxley furrowed his brow, turned on his heel, and stomped away as he shoved people out of his way. The line continued as though nothing had happened, and I began to realize not many of the citizens seemed to be on Huxley or his father's side. We'd yet to meet the violent and mean Lord Huntington, but I had a feeling he would soon make an appearance, and we didn't have to wait long. A few moments later, Huxley returned with his father in tow. But Lord Huntington looked like he'd seen better days. His robe was askew, his balding head glistened in the sunlight, and his skin shone with a thin layer of sweat. He looked about 30 pounds overweight, and he struggled to adjust the belt on his robes as he stumbled along behind his angry son.
"What is the meaning of this?"
Huntington demanded, as he motioned toward the line.
"I knew nothing of a death ritual."
"You wouldn't know because it just happened," Callan said, as he glared at the older man. "My mother, Countess Lena, has passed on to the other side. The people are paying their respects to her."
"I see," the fat man muttered. "Well now, I suppose that means I need to start preparing."
"You'll do nothing of the sort," Callan cut him off in an icy voice. "I've already begun the preparations, and you and your son may return to your home."
"Ah, yes, we must begin packing it to move into the royal hut,"
Huntington motioned toward the large central building.
"With Lena gone,
I'll be taking her place,"
Callan interrupted him again.
"She declared it upon her death."
"With no other witnesses,"
Huntington snickered.
"I highly doubt the people will allow such a thing. No one even knows who you are.
"I am Count Callan, noble of the Sword of Waning," he replied, as he unsheathed his sword and pointed it at the fat dragon. "And you and your son will not defy my rightful inheritance of the seat. I have accepted my role, and you will accept your fate, or I will give you another one."
Huntington narrowed his eyes and grabbed the blade, and blood trickled down his hand as he pulled himself closer to Callan with a gleam of disdain in his light eyes.
"You don't tell me what to do, boy," he snarled. "Hoxley could beat you in a single duel, and then you'll be shit out of luck in becoming anything but my stable boy. So go back to wherever you've been hiding the last 30 years, and don't come back."
I felt a growl rumble in my chest at the older dragon's hateful words, and I wanted to roast him on the spot. But it seemed Callan had other plans. He ripped his sword out of Huntington's hand and sliced off his pinky with a quick flick of his wrist. Then he aimed the blade at Huntington's throat and paused.
"Now that I have your attention and your finger, I want you to listen closely," Callan said in a low voice. "I said I'm not afraid of either of you. If you want your son to duel me for the seat, go ahead. But when I kill him in front of you, I better not see a single tear from your treasonous eyes."
Huntington took a shocked step backward, but Huxley wasn't finished.
"You have some fucking nerve talking to my father that way," the douche yelled. "In case you forgot, someone had to rule this place while your sickly mother was lying in bed all day doing nothing. That was my father!"
Callan snapped the sword faster than I could blink, and suddenly Huxley began to get shorter and shorter until he was no taller than 1.5 feet. I stifled a laugh as Huxley spun around and tried to get his bearings in his new small size.
"I decided your size should match your maturity," Callan retorted, before he turned toward Huntington. "I'm officially stripping you and your son of titles of Lord Huxley and Lord Huntington. Now, would you like the same fate as Huxley, or would you like to take your miniature son home?"
Huntington immediately scooped Huxley up from the ground and scurried back down the main road. I had a feeling they wouldn't be testing Callan anymore, though I wasn't sure he knew how to turn Huxley back to normal size, or if he even wanted to. I didn't really give a shit either way. Atmos was Callan's city now, and he could do what he wanted with the little bastard. "I'm sorry about your mom," I said as we walked over to join him. "But we have to get back to Hatra. Congratulations on your new job, though."
"It's a big one," he murmured. "I don't know how to do it, but I think I can figure it out."
"You were right. This birthright stuff seems to come naturally. You don't think I was too harsh on Huxley, right?"
"Nah," I chuckled. "And Huntington is lucky he only lost one finger. I think I might have cut off the whole hand with the attitude he had."
"It was tempting," Callan agreed with a smile. "But I don't want to scare everyone away. That seemed to be Huntington's way of doing things, and I'm not like that. I hope I'll be as good as my mother was."
"You will be," Nike said in a firm voice. "And now you have the whole brother and sisterhood of the nobles of the sword to back you up."
"It's incredible," Callan breathed. "Do you all have a spirit that pops into your head?"
"Yep,"
Skye said with a grin.
"Mine is Juniper. She said yours is Karina. As Lord Evan would say, it's awesome."
"Yeah, it is," I agreed. "Send me a messenger dragon if you need anything, or just want to talk. We need to get back to Hatra and find the next noble sword before the breach gets any stronger."
"I understand, brother," Callan murmured. "You have an important task ahead of you, and I need to keep my people safe. Once you've closed the breach, we'll see each other again."
"Deal," I said with a grin as we gripped each other's forearms. "See you soon, brother." I wanted to fly instead of portal, so I took my dragon form, and Nike, Aliona, Nokomis, and Skye climbed onto my back. We waved goodbye to the people of Atmos, and then I took off north toward Hatra. Part of me hated leaving Callan when I knew he needed a friend. But he had Celestia and a growing number of supporters in Hatra,
and the other part of me knew I was right about getting back to our mission. It was too important to push it off for anything or anyone else. We had to get the breach closed and the Demon King sealed off for good. As I glided over the desert, I could see the familiar stone walls of Hatra on the horizon. But something else caught my eye. In front of the gates to the city, a crowd had gathered.